I do want to throw out four movies as we get started this morning. These four movies, Gran Torino, Gladiator, Shawshank Redemption, and The Revenant. I want to ask if you might understand what those movies have in common. And while you're thinking about that, I want to make you aware, this summer we're going to have some fun with a sermon series. The month of July this year, we're going to have a series called Summer at the Movies. And so we're going to look at some biblical truths, biblical principles that are found in some of our favorite movies. Not these movies, by the way. Just make that clear. I can't recommend all of these movies, but a few of them are pretty good principles there. But either way, because of copyright, we won't be able to put them on the website afterwards. So if you want to, you know, if you want to be a part of it, you're going to have to be here. And it's summer. I recognize many of you have plans, but Summer at the Movies this July. I'm going to have a lot of fun with the series. So what do you think these four movies have in common? Here's a clue. It's the same theme as Carrie Underwood's song. You probably know it. How does it go? I dug my keys into the side of his pretty little souped-up four-wheel drive. I carved my name into his leather seats. I took a Louisville Slugger to both headlights. I slashed a hole in all four tires. Maybe next time, everybody with me now, he'll think before he cheats. Right. Now, I wouldn't admit this publicly, so please don't tell anyone, but I kind of like the tune. It's clever. It kind of sticks in your mind a bit, but I'm not really into girl power songs, if you will, but maybe you're like me. When the bad guy gets what he deserves, it's a good day. I mean, I know it's bad for a preacher to say that, but the theme of all those movies, the theme of that song, the theme of the message today is revenge. I don't know if you've thought this through, but sometimes when you ask someone about revenge, it's kind of like it's a difficult topic. Revenge, oh no, I would never seek revenge. I mean, no, that's for other people. I would never seek revenge. I mean, revenge is bad. But then, you know, if you ask someone this, their mind will begin to kind of, you know, turn, the wheels are turning, and they're thinking about it, and, oh, no, I would never get revenge. I would get even. I mean, I would want justice. I would never seek revenge. And it's, you know, I want to ask the question, well, what's the difference between revenge and getting even? Well, here's the difference. Revenge is what somebody does to me. Getting even is what I do to somebody else. It's a little bit more palatable, isn't it? For some reason, we think that the things that people do to us are these big, huge, unfair things, but yet when we do something to someone else, that it's not that big of a deal. So I just want to ask if we can all agree on something this morning. Can we just agree on this, that we're not usually very good at getting revenge? We're not. I mean, we can't just get even. We always want to go overboard. And those of you who are parents in the room and have had toddlers in your home, or maybe you're a grandparent and have had a toddler in your home, I mean, sometimes when we seek revenge, it's kind of like a toddler with a cereal box and a cereal bowl. I mean, they just kind of start, but if they're not careful, they just... That's what happens, right? I really wanted to do that in first service, but I held off just for you. That's what happens, though. Not sure I'm going to deal with this now. But we just kind of make a big mess. And somebody else has to come along and clean it up. Somebody else has to come along. Just kidding. But that's what toddlers do, don't they? You know, if you're not careful on a Saturday morning, they'll just kind of make a mess all over the kitchen counter. And I didn't even use milk this morning. We've all seen that before as well. That's what happens sometimes with revenge. And I kind of see God as kind of watching us when we're seeking revenge or acting on it. And it's kind of like God says, would you just give me the box? I know the proper amount. I can handle the issue of justice. I can handle the issue of making things right. I promise you this morning, God cares more about justice than anybody else in the room, than anybody else on the planet. If we would just kind of put the box in God's hands and let him dole out the justice, he'll give the right amount. But when we get impatient, we want to take things into our own hands, and we make a mess. So today we're concluding this series, Rise Above, on the life of Joseph from the tail end of the book of Genesis. And today we're going to look at kind of the last big scene of Joseph's life. talking about revenge. Now, if you've not been with us very long, or if you don't know much about Joseph's story, I want to give you kind of the Cliff Notes version of his story in just a few moments. Joseph is about 17 years of age when we run into him. He's the 11th of 12 sons. There's going to be a younger brother come along, but he's the favorite of the father. Again, all these other brothers are brothers from another mother. And it's a mess. I mean, you think about it. There's two wives and two mistresses in one household, lots of fireworks. And dad doesn't even pretend that Joseph isn't his favorite. Gives him a multicolored coat, dotes on him, and Joseph kind of, you get this idea that he just kind of, I got to do something here. You get this idea that Joseph just kind of strides around in this coat, just showing off all the time, and his brothers are jealous. They're frustrated. They're angry with him. Even gets to a point where his brothers decide, we're just going to get rid of the guy. And one day, he's in a position for them to do so, but instead they throw him into a pit. Reuben, the older brother, says, hey, let's not kill him. Let's sell him, which is somehow slightly better than killing him. And so these Midianite traders are coming along in a caravan, and Joseph gets sold to them, and they cart him off to Egypt all alone. His brothers probably won't run into him again for about another 15 years. So Joseph goes to Egypt and falls into another pit. This time he finds himself in Potiphar's house. He's sold as a slave, and Potiphar was a military man, very high up in the government. And Joseph has control over everything in the house except for Potiphar's wife. Potiphar should have told her that. Because one day, Potiphar's wife, well, day after day, in fact, she tries to seduce him. And finally, he says, ma'am, I can't do that. Right answer, but ends with wrong consequences. So she gets furious and falsely accuses him of rape, and Potiphar ends up throwing Joseph into prison, the next pit that he'll be in. But there in prison, he rises again, and he finds himself in good favor with the warden running the entire prison. And one day, two guys show up in prison, the cupbearer and the baker from Pharaoh's house. Both had dreams. And Joseph had this uncanny ability to interpret dreams. It clearly was a gift from God. And so the cupbearer asks him, what's going to happen? And he says, well, you're going to be released. To the baker, he says, you're going to be killed. And it happened. The baker was killed. The cupbearer was released. But he told him, he said, hey, when you're released to the cupbearer, when you're released and you're in Pharaoh's house again, please remember me. Tell Pharaoh about me. But he didn't. Until Pharaoh had a dream. No one in all the land could interpret it, so the cupbearer says, hey, I know a guy. And so they bring Joseph out of prison, get him cleaned up, and he interprets the dream. And basically it said this, the dreams mean that there will be 7 years of feast and 7 years of famine. But Joseph didn't just interpret the dreams. He also gave a strategy, proposed an idea. And the idea was, if you will set aside, stockpile 20% of crops during the good years, then during the 7 bad years, you'll be positioned to capitalize. So the story that we're going to look at today picks up kind of in the middle, sometime during that second 7-year period. But before we go there, Genesis 42, I want to fast forward to Genesis chapter 50. Very end of the story, almost the very last verse in the book of Genesis. Joseph's father, Jacob, has died, and the brothers are terrified that Joseph is going to get revenge. Listen to what Joseph says, Genesis chapter 50, verse 20. You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. How do you get to the place in Genesis chapter 50 from Genesis chapter 42, which we're going to start looking at in a moment? How do you get to that place where the pain of the pit gives way to strength for redemption? How do you do that? How do you move past the pain? From the moment you have the power to punish to the moment where you have the opportunity to redeem a nation, chapter 50. If I could just summarize the entire sermon in a brief phrase this morning, it would be this. Be stronger than your pain. Be stronger than your pain. All of us go through pain. I've talked enough about pain the last several weeks in this series. I hope to not talk about, we're going to talk about something a little more positive over the next few weeks, but pain is a reality of life, isn't it? All of us go through difficulty, go through pain, and sometimes we let the pain define us, and sometimes we define the pain. Here's what's true, though. Every pit you fall in, every pain that you experience is an opportunity for you to rise above it. And when you climb out of the pit, when you're able to get out of the pit, you will be stronger, faster, smarter, and wiser for it. And when that happens, You will be positioned. You will have the capacity to bring about redemption. So I want to take a look at Genesis chapter 42:6. This is the moment when Joseph's brothers come to him for the first time, haven't seen him for a while. They don't recognize him, and really, how could they? I mean, several years have passed. Joseph is probably about 30 years of age at this point. He's probably got on royal robes. He probably had on the makeup that the Egyptians would have worn, and he may have even had a shaved head, as they often did, which some of you in the room think must have been a handsome fella. Genesis 42, verse 6. Now Joseph was the governor of the land, the person who sold grain to all its people. So when Joseph's brothers arrived, they bowed down to him with their faces to the ground. So again, how do you get from chapter 42 to chapter 50? From the pain of this pit to a season of redemption. Now for some of you, this isn't a theoretical question. For some of you, this is reality. For anyone who has gone through a situation of divorce, you know what it's like to want revenge. You know what it's like to want to pull your kids aside and to say, well, you know, your dad did this, or your mom did this, or how wicked the other person is. If you've ever been undercut for a promotion, a position at work, you know what it's like to want revenge. If you've ever been betrayed by a close friend, you know what it's like to want revenge. If you've ever been betrayed by a family member or rejected and kind of ousted from the inner circle and you're just not in anymore. If that's happened to you, you know what it's like to want revenge. I want to say something to you very clearly this morning. If you are a person who wants revenge, right here, right now, you're not a bad person. To want revenge, to want justice, that's not evil. I mean, if we can just admit, though, for a moment, we're not good at carrying it out. To want justice, to want things to be right, that's something God has put in us. To want things to be right, to want justice. And in this case, we'll call it revenge. But to want that, God puts that desire in us. But we do need to admit that we struggle to do so well. That being said, I want to ask a question, and we'll circle back around to it at the end. If we're not good at carrying it out, how come God put that desire in us? I mean, why would he do that? If God put this desire in us and we're not good carrying it out. So again, we'll circle back around to that later. How can we be stronger than our pain? Easier said than done. So today I want to look at about six verses in Genesis chapter 42 and Genesis 45. And I want to give you four action steps to rise above revenge. Four principles that Joseph stood by, four principles that you and I can stand by when it comes to dealing with the issue of revenge. Number one, you need to control the narrative. You have to control the narrative. Anytime that you live through pain or a situation, a difficult situation, there's going to be different versions, isn't there? There's going to be his version, there's going to be her version, there's going to be our version, there's going to be somebody else. There's going to be different versions, and you need to learn to control what you tell yourself or what you allow yourself to believe. Control the narrative. And it usually starts with you understanding who you are. You need to claim your identity. You need to remember, I talk about this a lot, we in life need to remember who we are. We need to claim, you need to claim your identity in the midst of the pain and not let the pain change you. Because if the pain changes you, you won't be able to change your future. If we look at the life of Joseph, there were lots of different times that he could have succumbed to the pain and allowed that pain to become his identity. I mean, think about a few for just a moment. When his brothers threw him into the pit, he could have said, well, I'm just a throwaway person. My family doesn't want me. I'm just a throwaway person. This last week, we were on a cruise, and you know, you might have known it was spring break week. Where do college kids go for spring break week? Our cruise was probably half full of college students. So there were like 55 preachers and their wives. And with other staff there, it was like a group of about 160 of us total. And then a whole bunch of other people. And then a whole bunch of college kids. And it it was a little crazy. And it was like, wow, I'm glad that I never had the inkling to go on a cruise or go to the beach. And I just don't think that would have been good for me. I sure know where my kids are not going for spring. Sadly, there are probably some college kids that got off that boat with a little bit of regret this week and went back home feeling like somebody took something from them this week. and then threw them away. And they may let this experience from this last week identify who they think that they are as maybe a throwaway person. Sometimes, we dealt with this in Mexico, sometimes children who are adopted feel like, well, you know, my biological parents didn't want me, they threw me away, or whatever the details were. Or if you're an athlete and you suffer an injury and get to a place where the coach or the organization, teammates say, hey, you're just not getting it done anymore. Or if you're in the workplace and all of a sudden the boss says, hey, you're just not performing how you used to be. I mean, sometimes if we're not careful, we let an experience become our identity. Joseph was never allowed the pit. He never allowed the pit of pain to identify him. You know, he could have said, well, my brothers threw me into a pit. That's who I am. No, he said, I'm a child of a father who loves me. The pit is my experience, but my identity is the son of a father who loves me. Joseph goes to Egypt, and he could have easily said, well, you know, I'm a slave. Potiphar owns me. That's who I am. But he didn't. He remembered, I am the son of a father who loves me. Went to prison, could have said, I'm a prisoner. I'm a victim of the system, whatever it may be. But he didn't. Instead, he said, that's my experience, but my identity is I'm the son of a father who loves me. So if we are going to get from Genesis chapter 42 to Genesis chapter 50, you have to claim your identity. Don't let the experience of a painful situation change who you are, or you will not be able to change your future. Now, I know some of you are probably thinking, well, that was easy for Joseph. Joseph had a father who loved him. A father who gave him stuff and gave him this multicolored coat. That's not where Joseph found his identity, that coat. It was his God-given dream. Genesis chapter 42, verse 9 says this, Then he remembered his dreams about them, about his brothers, family, and said to them, you are spies, you've come to see where our land is unprotected. Now the second part of that verse, I don't really care that much about for the context here, for our purposes here this morning. But the first part, what drove him was the God-given dream. That was his identity, who he was in Jesus. It's an important lesson for Joseph. His identity didn't come from Jacob, didn't come from his father. His identity came from God. When God gave him this dream early on, that was his identity. That was his destiny. When Potiphar's wife tried to seduce Joseph, he said, how could I go and do such a thing against my master and against who? Against my God. Joseph's identity was as a son of a father who loved him. In Genesis chapter 50, verse 20, when his brothers think that he's going to get revenge, he says, I'm not going to get revenge. My identity is not in you. You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. And so if each of us this morning, if we could wrap our hands around the idea that our identity is coming from God, if we can do that, if we can believe that, then we can effectively wait for God's window. We can be patient, wait for God's timing. When we're dealing with revenge, it's crucial that we have patience. If you can wait for God's window and let God open it up, then you'll be able to see what he is doing about justice. But if you don't understand who you are, and therefore don't understand who God is, then you can't wait for his timing. And again, we'll be like that child with the cereal bowl. We'll just make a huge mess. If you don't know who God is because you don't know who you are, sometimes we will take the pain and we will pursue the vengeance. We will pursue getting even. We'll hold it tight. And friends, when you do that, that will eat you alive. I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. I mean, I would be willing to guess. If you were sitting in a room with a close friend or family member, they were sharing some things with you about a difficult situation, you would give them counsel like we're talking about today. It's just difficult when we go to apply it to our own lives. There was a man named Brad Bushman. He was a professor at the University of Ohio. He did a study looking into what happens when people vent their anger. What happens when people do get their revenge, when they do get even? And you may guess, it doesn't bring down the anger. It doesn't bring down the pain. When people get revenge, when people get even, when they vent their anger in those unhealthy ways, all it does is multiply. All it does is increase. So how do we put this into practice? Well, if you can control the narrative, if you can claim your identity, if you can wait for God's window, then second of all, you can strategize to make things right, not simply right a wrong. I mean, if you are just wanting to get back at someone, again, you're going to be like the toddler with the cereal bowl. But if you're wanting to redeem a situation, that's a whole different set of strategies. You can read about Joseph's strategies, Genesis 42, verse 13 through 20. I don't want to get into all that today because your strategy, my strategy, will be different from his strategy. But here's what I do know. If you can control the narrative, if you can claim your identity, if you can be in control of the situation, the parts that you can control, you will be able to climb out of the pit. Here's something else I know, and you know it too. People who push people into pits fall into pits themselves. You've heard it said that hurt people hurt people. Well, people who push people into pits fall into pits. And if you're in the pit, when the person who pushed you into the pit falls into the pit, your only option at that point is to duke it out. Because you haven't grown through the situation yet. You haven't climbed yet out of the pit. But if you've climbed out of the pit, I know we're kind of circling around, and the person that pushed you into the pit then falls into the pit, you now have the upper hand. And you have the option, the opportunity to reach down with the upper hand, with a helping hand, and help them up out of the pit. That's the next step in the process of reconciliation. So here's a question for you this morning. When you strategize like that, I mean, come on, does it really work? You bet it does. Look down in verse 21. Here's the consequence of Joseph's strategy. Genesis 42, 21, they, the brothers, said to one another, "Surely we're being punished because of our brother. We saw how distressed he was when he pleaded with us for his life, but we would not listen. That's why this distress has come on us." They already know. I mean, they don't even know who their brother is right in front of them, but they already know that they've been guilty before God. They're aware of this. It's no surprise to them because Joseph has waited for God to work, for God to do his convicting through his spirit in their hearts and minds. God put them in a position that they could think about what they'd done and the consequences that God would bring about because of it. And so if you are able, if I am able, if we can strategize to make things right and not just right or wrong, then you're going to be able to move to the next level. This is really important because I hear a lot of preachers, when they're talking about forgiveness and about revenge, they'll often say this, "Well, you just need to let it go. You just let it go and move on." No, I don't want you to let it go. I want you to stand on top of it. I want you to wrestle the anger, the frustration, the pain to the ground and stand on top of it, figuratively speaking. That's what I want you to do. Climb yourself out of the pit. Stand on top of it, because in that moment, with the control that you have and the identity that you have in Jesus Christ as a son or daughter of the King, and the strategy you have, because now you are stronger, faster, wiser, smarter, you'll be able to make something beautiful out of a very difficult situation. Especially true if you've been abused in some way. Strategy says, well, I can still help this person without becoming vulnerable to that person. In fact, if you've been abused, don't ever put yourself in a position to be abused by that person again. If you've been embezzled against, or your company has, you don't ever want to put yourself in a position to be embezzled by them again. If you've been betrayed by a close friend, you want to be very careful. Don't put yourself in a position to be betrayed by that person again. But you can punish with kindness. Now, I hope you'll track with me till the end of the sermon, because that sounds a little harsh. My dad told me a lot when I was a kid, just kill him with kindness, son. Works great on the playground, Dad. Thanks. Just kill him with kindness. And some of you might be thinking, well, I don't want to be kind to that person who hurt me. I know it sounds like nonsense, but watch what Joseph actually does. Genesis 42, verse 25. Joseph gave orders to fill their bags with grain, to put each man's silver back in his sack, and to give them provisions for their journey. So his brothers came to buy grain. And as they're leaving, Joseph says, well, put the grain in there, but also put the silver that they brought to pay for it. Put that in their bag and also give them provisions for the journey. Why would he do that? I mean, that's just dumb, right? Oh no, Joseph's messing with them. That's exactly what he's doing. And when you treat people with kindness, when they expect vengeance, there's a couple things that happen that are brilliant. Let's say you've been through the difficulty of divorce and you have kids. Again, your natural instinct is to pull your kids close and say, hey, you know, your mom, I mean, she did this. You don't know it, but she did this and she did that. And you know, that's why this has happened. This is all her fault. You know what happens, right? When you bash your ex to your children, they become defensive of your ex. It backfires on you. Why is that? Well, when we choose to retaliate for the evil done to us, the enemy all of a sudden has justification for what they've done. See, I told you so. See what type of person they really are? I mean, think about this other situation. Someone maybe talks bad about you, gossips about you, and then this day and age, we get on social media and we type up a bunch of indirect, direct statements, right? I just hate it when such and such and such and somebody said, everybody knows exactly who you're talking about. And now all of a sudden, that person has reason to say, look, see, I told you so. Now they're showing their true colors. See, you never saw it before, but now they're showing their true colors. It justifies what they did as if it was self-defense. You ever bought a diamond? Why do you think they pull the diamond out and they put it on a piece of black velvet? It's because beauty shines all the better against darkness. And when you repay evil with evil, it's just darkness. But when you repay evil with good, it shines all the more brightly. So again, when you punish with kindness, it just blows their mind. It's difficult. I mean, think about it. It's difficult to get into a custody battle with someone who's nice to you. And when we repay kindness for evil, it puts us in a position for blessing, for immense good. Such good advice, we see it all throughout the Bible. Joseph gives us a great example here. Jesus, in Matthew 5, says to turn the other cheek. The wise King Solomon said this, Proverbs chapter 25. If your enemy is hungry, give him food to eat. If he's thirsty, give him water to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head, and the Lord will reward you. Great advice from King Solomon. Such good advice. The Apostle Paul would quote Solomon's advice right after this verse in Romans chapter 12, verse 19. I want to give you the context. Do not take revenge, my dear friends, but leave room for God's wrath. For it is written, it is mine to avenge. I will repay, says the Lord. The Lord says, I will repay. But do you believe that? I mean, will God get even? Because if you don't know who God is, and you don't know who you are, and if you don't have control of the narrative, if you don't have control of the situation, you cannot repay kindness for evil. But if you can do what we've been talking about, if you can walk through these steps, it will position you. The next step is quite simple. Number four, get out of God's way. Get out of God's way. I promise you, in this very moment, I don't know what you're going through, but I promise you, God is already at work doing what needs to be done to make the wrong right. And more than that, he won't just right a wrong. God will bring about redemption instead of vengeance. As Joseph approaches his brothers, we move to Genesis chapter 45. This is the big reveal. This is the moment. This is where the movie soundtrack transitions again. This is the moment in the Dirty Harry movie where he says, hey, punk, make my day, right? I think I misquoted it. Go ahead, make my day. Or the Terminator. Can't get this one wrong. I'll be back. I mean, this is that type of moment in the scene. Genesis 45, verses 4 and 5. Then Joseph said to his brothers, come close to me. I mean, I really wish I could have been there to see this. Come close to me. When they'd done so, he said, I'm your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. Somewhere down deep, maybe. Isn't that what you really want? I mean, out of the situation of your divorce or the embezzlement or with the cheating or the lying or the child who's been abused and left, and in the situation where you want revenge in this moment, isn't it ultimately redemption that you want? Not just revenge? Again, we're just not good at revenge. We're not good at getting even. And so can you get out of the way and let God take control of the justice and take control of the kindness? And you do your part. I get asked as a pastor quite frequently, you know, Seth, can we talk? And you know, we'll talk. And you know, this happened. And it's tragic. It's difficult. But I get asked a lot of times this question, well, how can I get over that? How can I move past that? Again, I don't want you to get over it. I want you to stand on top of it. If God allows you to go through this season of pain, and he does, life is difficult. Life happens. If God allows you to go through these seasons of pain, I have to believe it's because he trusts that you'll be strong enough to get through it. And then with an upper hand, you reach down and give a helping hand to someone who doesn't know who God is, to someone who doesn't understand grace and mercy and forgiveness. Consider this for just a moment, because a lot of times we're just on the receiving end of things. I mean, somebody that's just angry and hateful and hurtful around us, we're just kind of always getting the brunt of that. But I just want to challenge you for a minute. Sometimes we need to understand their story a little bit. Sometimes that's helpful. Maybe you had an angry father, or maybe you know a depressed mom, or just a person who's always a drag and just very unsure of themselves. Maybe you need to take a moment just to hear a little bit about their story to help you understand. Because chances are, it's not you that they're trying to push down into the pit. They're just down in the pit, and they don't know how to get out of it themselves. And so if you can get your identity from God, and if you can strategically show kindness and get out of God's way, but perhaps you can truly find redemption for that situation. And I do suppose if you were sitting there this morning, and if I were to, you know, step into your shoes for a moment, and I'd lived through some of the situations, I might want to ask the question that you're thinking as well. What if God doesn't get even? I mean, come on, Seth. What if God doesn't get even? Who's going to do it? Well, like you or I could do any better than God, right? I mean, all we do is make a mess. But that in mind, I want to take a big thought from Genesis 49. Condense it down just a bit. We're not going to read it, but I want to set the stage for you. Jacob is on his deathbed. He's a dying man. Has his 12 sons around him, and one by one, Jacob reaches out his hand and puts it on their heads, and he does something very, very Jewish. He kind of gives them a blessing. But some of the blessings actually sound a bit like a curse. You can read it for yourselves. But all Jacob is doing is this. He is identifying the character of his sons. And the character of his sons, which was their history, would also determine their destiny. Don't miss this. I don't want to be too somber about it, but the character of people who throw you into a pit is their justice. The character of people who push you into a pit is their justice. It's their destiny. And you have to know, even if you can't see it, because again, Joseph couldn't see any of that all those years in Egypt. Even if you cannot see what God is already doing, he is at work to right the situation. And I know that there's a heaven, I know there's a hell, I know that one day there will be judgment with punishment at the end of time. But even here, right now, Genesis 49 is pretty clear on this. No one gets away with pushing somebody into a pit. God will have his vengeance. Their nature is their own curse that will drive them into their own pit. So as we circle back around to the question, if we're not good at revenge, then why does God put in us a desire for things to be right, a desire for justice, whatever you want to call it, getting even? Why does he do that if we're not capable of doing that well? Because the desire for justice is not what should drive you to revenge, but what should drive you to God. Don't miss that. Your desire in you, your desire to make things right, for justice, for revenge, should drive you to God. Because you do need justice as well. Don't you? In your life? I mean, don't you need someone to come alongside and redeem the situation? Here's the takeaway this week. I want to challenge you to release and receive. Release in the idea of forgiveness and receive God's redemption. Instead of giving you something just to walk out of here and think about, I want to give you kind of an action point today. At some point during the course of the day, I want you to take out a piece of paper. You can rip it off your sermon notes, whatever you want to do. And I want you just to think for just a moment. I want you to write down a name, write down a date, write down a feeling or an experience. I'm going to write one down because I have one. I want to challenge you to write something down. Someone who hurt you, or how you felt, or when it happened. And then I want to ask you to take that piece of paper, crumple it up, hold it in your hand, and then find somewhere you can throw it away and never see it again. Throw it in the trash, burn it in the fire pit. I don't care what you do. We're under a burn ban right now, are we? It's supposed to rain today. It'll be okay. I don't want you to just get over it. I want you to label it, identify it, and then throw it away. You know why? Because if your hands are full of revenge, if your heart is set on justice, you will not be able to receive God's redemption. Without Jesus Christ in your life, it is impossible to move from Genesis 42 to Genesis 50 without understanding your own grace and forgiveness that you've received. I recognize that this could be a game changer for some people in the room. Some of you are at a fork in the road. You've been harboring this feeling for too long. You need to find a way to release it. Wrestle it to the ground. Stand on top of it. Let's ask God for his help. Let's pray together. Father, we do thank you for today. We thank you for your word. And Lord, as we wrap up this series on the life of Joseph, it's a little sad for me, God, but so much to apply to our lives. Father, help us as